In order to increase usage, people will use the data. And that's a great thing because then we'll start to see other things that we never talked about before, right? Fit for purpose is a great one.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bangel, founder and CEO of Bark, and my guests today are Laura Madsen and Tiankai Feng. Both are very seasoned data professionals with a focus on data governance. I invited them both because Laura wrote a book called Disrupting Data Governance and Tiankai translated it into German language, and I wanted to know, why do we need to disrupt data governance and what does it take to come up with a modern way to govern data? We talk about that. We learn a lot about that. What are the pillars and cornerstones of a good and modern working data governance function? But also, what does it need to be successful with data governance? So I think there's a lot in here. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Laura. Hi, Tiankai.
Hi.
Great to have you two in my podcast. This will be a new episode with two guests at the same time, which is a bit unusual, but there's a good reason for that. Laura, you wrote a book entitled Disrupting Data Governance, and Tiankai, you translated it into German language, and that's why both of you are here. And obviously, this book triggers the first question, Laura. Why do you think data governance needs to be disrupted?
Sure, yeah. So the story goes, I quit my day job at the end of 2018 and did a little bit of a state of the state, if you will, in the data industry, trying to figure out what was really holding us back from delivering great insights to our organizations. And as one does, I Googled data governance. And at the time, I got a full page, two paragraph answer about what data governance was and realized that that was part of the problem, right? We didn't know what it was. We didn't know how to operationalize it. You know, the more you say, the less you say kind of a thing. So I knew I had to write that book. And when I started doing more digging, realized that we had not modernized our data governance function since the late 90s when it was first proposed. So we were really thinking about data governance like, you know, essentially representing how we thought about data warehouses in the late 90s, which is relatively small, right? So not big data. Definitely not fast because we did weekly batch processes. There was not a lot of diversity in the data, those kinds of things. So it was a very parochial idea of data governance compared to our modern data organizations. And on top of that, it was extremely committee heavy, committee and council heavy. And in 25 years of working in the data industry, I had never actually seen data governance in that way work for most organizations. And so I knew it needed to be disrupted.
All right. And Tiankai, I mean, you've been on this podcast before, dealt with data governance in your practical work life. And so what made you translate the book? Why? What got you interested?
Absolutely. So I think, I mean, first of all, when I started my data governance journey now almost 3 years ago, that was one of the first books I read. It was recommended by my back then boss who hired me to do product data governance. And basically, that was one of the books that I read. And I found it really refreshing and also really more aligned with my values and how I would see data working generally. Me also coming from a marketing analytics background in the past and having been like seeing how marketing can be successful based on data, I was particularly, I think, intrigued by how there were analogies in there that really also rebrand data governance, as in looking at governance more as ambassadors rather than authority figures, for example, as enablers and like as people that actually guide rather than force something on people. So I like that whole approach a lot. And yeah, so a few years later, I feel even more related to it now, having actual experience in it and knowing what the book is even now in detail about. So I felt like for the German market, the German speaking market, for those that might want to read it in their own native language, just to do like a service almost and like bring it closer also here. So that was my motivation.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for doing that. And now I think both of you got us really interested. So how does, let's call it a modern data governance concept look like?
Well, I'll kick that off by just saying that it needs to be very focused on how the organization operates. And if anything, I hope the book talks about or at least represents the idea that, you know, you have to take what works and only you know what really works for your organization. There are some things that I firmly believe don't work. So one of the main things is I talk a lot about removing committees and councils. And some of that is because we put the decision rights on people that don't really know. and it slows down the progress of our ability to move things forward. We're asking people in business line, you know, functions that don't have any line of sight to how data actually works to make really big, convoluted decisions with, you know, support, of course, from data stewards, but the data steward knows all the ins and outs. And it just makes that, you know, sort of that idea of councils and committees who have decision rights really challenging. The other thing that I really, you know, focus on is the idea that I don't really care how you define data governance. What I care about is how you operationalize it. So I focus on four pillars. That's increasing the usage of the data, because if for no other reason, the reason data governance exists is so we can use the data, right? And so we really should, that should be one of our main pillars. So using the data, so increasing usage, ensuring quality, because there's no data governance without data quality, and there's no data quality without data governance. Creating and maintaining data lineage, which includes metadata, but it's a whole story about the lineage of the data. And then finally, of course, because we have to, is ensuring protection. So those are a couple of things, but Tianca, I'd be interested in what you think were the highlights.
Absolutely. And I think that whole, even the first principle of actually increasing data usage is a little bit in contrast to the traditional approach to data governance, right? Where it's a lot about holding back things, rather avoid risk, stopping access, putting approval processes in there, so it's harder to get access to them. And all of that is really not helping if you want to actually generate value with the data, right? So I've also realized that when you take that all together and you think about also data quality by definition means fit for purpose. And if you're not clear about what the data is being used for and for what purposes, how can you even define data quality to manage it, right? So all that kind of fits together. And I really like that approach to tailor it and address it more from the data consumption side rather than only from data production side. And to say, we only produce it for certain reasons. Rather, how can we reuse it and use it even more to drive even more strategic success for any organization? Also that, I think to your last point about avoiding risk, right? I like that whole approach to separate the enabling usage from the risk part a little, like with a more a responsibility on the infosec side. They should actually be more responsible regarding how to assess the risks and how to embed basically risk elements and risk control in these factors. Because if you do it all centrally, and you enable usage, but avoid risk at the whole time, you are being pushed back and forth almost the whole time, right? So having a little bit of a clearer segregation of duties, I think it's really good.
Interesting. Let's delve into these four pillars a little bit more deeper. And obviously, increasing usage, I think, resonates extremely well with me because you are on the Data Culture podcast, and data culture is all about increasing usage and creating an environment and an atmosphere and a mindset that should increase usage. So I'm obviously super interested in that part. So what do you think are the most important, let's say, initiatives or ideas that can increase usage?
Sure. So, you know, this is always a really interesting topic for me because usage is one of those things that we all sort of intuitively understand as our job as data professionals. We don't necessarily always think about how to do it. We are, as Tianca just said, we're so focused on the production and getting the data in and getting it kind of ready. We don't necessarily think about what does the usage mean in the context of that. And I propose in the book that the idea here is that you have to allow people to use it and make mistakes. And that often strikes terror in the hearts of most data professionals. But the reality here is that as you push data out, people will do things with data that you never intended. And the more we try to stop them from doing that, the more we actually get in the way of people finding insights. And so we have to account for, you know, very early on the idea that it is our job to release data into the wild. It is also our job to anticipate that things are going to happen that we didn't, you know, plan for and what we would do in those situations. And that's why we, you know, in the book, we talk a little bit more about this idea of ambassadors. I think I even called them first responders or something at one point. The whole idea here is in order to increase usage, people will use the data. And that's a great thing because then we'll start to see other things that we never talked about before, right? Fit for purpose is a great one. How do you know it's for purpose if you don't really know what they're doing, why they're doing it, how they're doing it? But the other thing is you will improve your data quality the more eyeballs you have on data. And there is no question about that. But the hard thing is that you will, things will happen, right? As people are using the data, they'll ask you questions, the quality will be questioned. And that's a difficult thing, I think, for most data professionals to kind of sit with, is that people are asking really hard questions. Yeah,
I would add to that, actually. So like making data more used is great, but you also want them to use it for the in the right way, right? And this is also where the other principle of like data lineage and metadata comes in, right? Because if you just make data visible without providing any context, then there's a million different interpretations of what the data is meaning and what they think they can be used for, right? And it's maybe one side is, of course, avoiding risk, but you also just want to avoid having completely misunderstandings of what the data leads to decisions to, right? And if you really want to then ensure that data is increasingly used, it has to be used for successful use cases as well, and not just for misleading ones that create more conflict and fights between people because they don't agree on what the data says or what the data means, right? So I think this whole approach of metadata management and bringing data catalogs in and having that adopted, so metadata is actually a good layer of information and context, is really important as well.
All right. And do you have any experiences you can share or initiatives that you saw that companies took to increase usage that were you found especially beneficial or especially successful? You already talked about, okay, we need to encourage people also to do mistakes, for example. Yeah, we need, Tianca, you mentioned like cataloging. So you want to get the information out, what data actually is available. But what else? I'm sure you saw a lot of good things that our listeners here can benefit from.
I would say, I mean, I think reporting is a really classical use case, right? Where you basically are doing some kind of sales process. Let's say you're doing e-commerce and you want to understand not only what financial impact it brings, but also the why behind it, like what leads to that financial revenue. So let's say you're connecting financial data with behavioral data and transactional data and all that together, and you want to make it a reporting. This having said, in any bigger enterprise organization, you have a lot of different systems that by name are doing the same things somehow and are somehow like processing, storing, or making accessible some type of data, both on the financial side or the transactional side. So how to make it right, right? And if you leave it out there and certain people are starting to create different reports that are then conflicting with each other, then instead of actually making it more reused or used, it actually leads to not using it at all because everybody's confused of what even the source of truth is, right? And this is where I think data governance really steps in a really effective way to say, okay, we're going to clean it up here now. So how do we define what actually we all agree on? What should be the right metrics and where do they come from? What do we define as sources of truth? And ideally, maybe in a data mesh or a data product world, create a data product that exactly scopes that one out. And in the future, everybody's going to use that data product, for example, to create their reports. And we all talk in the same language, right? So in a way, and also talking about that first responder or ambassador type, there's a lot of this bringing people together, right? Translating from all sides, being the mediator kind of a persona that really helps to find agreements there. And I think like writing policies or writing rules down is only the like final missing piece that then makes it official, right? But everything before is super important. And it's often, I think, not realized how much people work data governance also is. Yeah.
Absolutely. I've seen a lot of success when organizations tightly define the scope of data governance. You know, there is, you know, there's so many analogies with data governance to talk about like boiling the ocean or eating the elephant or whatever. And it's all like, how do I do this? It's so large and amorphous. But even with something like defining terms, you know, I talk an example in the book, right, where there was a hospital trying to define the weight of a patient and it took them 18 months to do that. And so the simple question was, well, what did you use in the meantime? Because you weren't not defining weight of the patient for 18 months while all of these committees tried to get their ducks in a row. And so the question really is, what is the value versus what is the effort? And most departments through an enterprise use conceptually different ways or different definitions of data terms. And I posit that that's fine. Like day to day in your daily work, within your department, you define it however you want. What really matters from a governance perspective is what Tianke just talked about, which is when you're using it across departments, across functions, even across geographic areas or campuses or regions, you have to know what everybody's talking about. And so when we've seen success with this sort of modern data governance is defining that scope really tightly and only spending that valuable effort when the output is commensurate with that, which is when we care about to compare across our organization and let other people use what they need to use in order to get their job done.
Mm-hmm. Which actually leads me to the second pillar you mentioned, ensuring quality. You already mentioned before a data steward being very knowledgeable about the data. So maybe you give us a bit more detail. What do you think is the best approach to ensure quality?
$1 million question. Yeah.
My best advice is probably twofold, but my best advice is you get out of it what you put into it. And in 25 years, I've probably seen a handful of organizations that literally focus on data quality, where they have a team dedicated to the effort and they understand and know that, you know, the input you put out and the output you get. It is incredibly concerning to me on the, you know, as we're standing on the precipice of AI, that most data organizations do not have a data quality team. So I can tell you all the crazy things to do from a data governance perspective, definitions, you know, like metrics, algorithms, all those other things. Read Danette McGilvery's book, Executing Data Quality Projects. It is the, you know, it's like the book on this topic. But at the end of the day, you do not have people focusing on this effort. You are going to get out of it what you put into it, which is not a lot.
Yeah, I actually have to agree. It's really, we see that often too. Yeah. So people complaining about data quality, but in the end, it's always this part of the project or the budget or the initiatives where then you cut or you then run out of money, run out of time.
Yep, just don't do it.
Exactly. I have also observed another interesting like bias towards data quality. It feels like when people complain about data quality or have data quality projects, it's focusing on the monitoring part a lot more. So it's like, we need monitoring for data quality. But monitoring is only the first half, right? Because once you monitor and you flag bad data quality, you still need to understand where the bad quality comes from and who is responsible for fixing it, but most importantly, right? So that is usually the forgotten part. So in the end, it's like, okay, now this data governance team set up a data quality monitoring finally, and then let's ask for commitment for when there's an issue that certain people actually are going to fix it. They get triggered like with an alerting or something and they actually do something about it. And then all of a sudden it gets tricky again, right? Like, oh, I didn't know I have to do something to make data quality better. Right. So I think like this data quality being a cross-functional effort is really misunderstood, and that data governance is associated with data quality has that image that it's just all centralized ownership of data quality as a whole, and only that one central team is going to fix it all. But same as data governance overall, right? Making sure that it's understood to be cross-functional and that it takes a cross-functional effort to do it, I think is really key here as well.
What's your advice? So who can fix data quality and how do we organize that now? And especially, how can we motivate people to actually do it?
So I think Tianke's comment about like, you have to back that truck up, right? Well, you didn't say that, but that's how I'm paraphrasing you, which is...
I agree, yeah.
Which is, it's a cross-functional thing, but it's also, you know, data quality challenges, opportunities, if you will, start when data is entered, which is almost always associated with a human. So somebody's entering data inappropriately, you know, based on how we define those boundaries. And so often we try to fix it too late down that work stream. So we're trying to, you know, like we did this a lot in ETL in the 2000s. And that's why ETL projects ended up being these monstrosity things. 80% of your work effort in a data warehouse was associated with ETL because we were fixing everybody else's bad behavior. This is at the end of the day, this is psychology 101. You fix that data quality as close to it as possible. You identify it, you take that action. If they're entering it wrong, then you fix it where they're entering it wrong. You do not let it go all the way down to your data repository, whatever, you know, whatever version of that you have now. I think that's really important. The motivation, however, is really challenging, right? Because those people that are entering data, they don't contextually have that information of what is quote unquote wrong. They also don't generally see the reports at the back end of it. So they don't have that closed loop system, if you will, of I see this back, you know, in a report, so therefore I have to fix what I'm doing on the front end. And sometimes that's actually our own data teams that prevent that whole story. That's why I talk about, instead of specifically about data meta, like managing metadata, I talk about lineage. because metadata is important, but most people, most business people understand the context of lineage, like the beginning and the end. And so we have to draw that line for people to understand that what you're entering here has an implication on the back end. And when you tell that full story, people start to understand that data quality is everybody's job, but particularly from a data entry perspective, you know, we have to be able to be fixing those things at the beginning, not the end.
I think also adding to that, another, I think, useful convincing factor is to say it might mean a lot of manual work right now because we're like triggering a lot of issues that need to be manually fixed because it's from the production side. What we're aiming towards is to prevent them in the future too, right? It's more about in the future not even having to fix it reactively, but preventatively not even have them happen in the first place. And that will make everybody more happy. So I always call it like a necessary first step where we have to acknowledge that we have issues and we feel the pain of having to fix it all the time. But once we know that it's hard to fix and it takes a lot of effort, we hopefully are motivated enough to put in factors to prevent it, right? Like, and that would mean, for example, either training on the manual data production side more and people being more diligent and like more conscious about what they're putting in. It might be our system owners that are better in checking if the data that's coming in upstream is good enough or what is coming out downstream is good enough. And they could have responsibility to flag it too, but just more conscious dealing with data quality itself that hopefully then addresses it proactively and not reactively.
Mm-hmm. So your advice in a nutshell is focus on where data is created and that prevents a lot of quality issues.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. So we now looked at three of the four pillars. Yeah, we talked about increasing usage. We talked about quality and data lineage you mentioned in both of the other answers you gave. Let's take a look at the protection side of things. And what comes to my mind is that we at Bark, we have a lot of discussions when we talk about how can we promote or improve a data culture in an organization, that actually it's really worthwhile to think about your access principles when we talk about the need to know versus the right to know approach to it. Is that what you also mean with protection here?
I think it could certainly be related to that. The protection piece was actually when I first started writing this work, it was pretty obvious to me that data governance had created itself a very bad habit, which is for a long time, we didn't have professionals in compliance and privacy and information security when data governance first started. So data professionals like myself would be those pseudo governance people where we'd be writing policies and procedures. We were executing against those access rights. We didn't really understand the actual implications because as we were doing that in the data world, right? Something interesting was happening in the rest of the world, which was data privacy rights. All of a sudden, with the onset of big, quote unquote, big data and all the things that were happening in the big tech companies, people started to pay more attention. And then governments started to actually write laws that we needed to comply with. And then there was an entire industry that kind of came along, right? That talks about how do you actually do this? And that's compliance, privacy, risk, information security. And a lot of organizations left to the data governance people responsible or accountable for that function. And it actually increased the risk to those organizations because they weren't professionals in that space. So the primary sort of thesis, if you will, for ensuring protection I was in the book was advocating for the idea that data governance professionals are not accountable for that work. And I got a lot of very strongly worded messages about that one.
Why that?
When the book first came out, because it was super controversial, just even 2019, right? Like, you're crazy. You have to, you know, this is our job. And it's not data governance's job. It is absolutely data governance's job to be part of that, to be responsible for the execution of all of those principles. But it's the job of ensuring that we do that right is with our information security people. It's with compliance, privacy risk, as they're writing those policies. And so what I talk about a lot is creating that happy alliance, which is you have to be in lockstep with those folks in your organization. It's not like all of a sudden data governance is like, oh, thank goodness I don't have to do this anymore. That's not it. It's that our responsibility changes to, they tell us what we should be doing and we tell them, okay, here's how I get to, you know, here's how I know I can execute against that in my data repository, like the reality of that work and ensuring that people have the right access, right, to the data that they should be seeing or should not be seeing. And then the ability to prove that that's happening, I think is the key message there, is that data governance professionals should absolutely not be leading that. They should be participating in that.
I will also add to that, like, at least in Germany, I know that you have data protection officers that are legally accountable for certain laws being complied with, right? So even assuming that data governance would be accountable for it, just legally doesn't make any sense either, right? And once everyone understands that, then data governance changes from being that scapegoat for all of these things, all of a sudden being actually more of an enabler, right? And helping to make it happen for those that actually are accountable. And I think this is a really nice message that I usually use to say, we help making things compliant. We are not accountable for things being compliant, but we can help you to most of the way to get it done, as long as you then can say you're signing off on this and this is for you now acceptable and this is for you legally compliant, right? And in many ways, I see that also as a translator, right? And I always called it legal ethical requirements versus data requirements, and data governance is exactly in between, right? Like, we understand both worlds mostly, right? And then we translate that into actual what needs to happen in the data to then like being basically the mediator again, or the translator between the two worlds, and therefore enabling that it all works. Also, again, this whole topic of metadata, data lineage, it's all about transparency, we always say, right? So making it then easy to be audited in the very end, for example, in case that happens, is part of the job as well, right? So then we can also say data governance helped make the audit very smooth and to pass the audit probably as well, that we're actually are compliant and are we have data protection mechanism in there.
Tianca, you mentioned data mesh before. Mm-hmm. And obviously an integral part of this idea or concept is the federated governance. And I want to hear your take on that. How can I make that work, or is it ever going to work to federate governance? What's your take on this topic?
Absolutely. I think I believe that federated data governance can work, but it's mostly because in the data mesh, one of the key principles is also to be more domain empowered, right? And domain thinking means there's ownership on domain level too. And we all know data ownership was always a big struggle and a big factor within data governance. Enforcing it through a data mesh actually is pretty smart, I have to say, because then you're empowering decentral domains that anyway then have to own things, means that there's actual accountabilities and more better decision-making regarding data governance things as well. I believe there's still a central layer needed that is like a facilitation role and like a enabling role to cross domain, ensure that everything is working and that there are standards on an enterprise level, not only on domain level, right? And to also make sure that platforms and data products have certain guardrails embedded as code as much as possible, like really automate it. But really, basically, with the ownership on domain level and having that governance there, actually, things should actually work better.
They do. When I work with clients, we almost always do some version of what I call hub and spoke or federated model. And I did not, when I was writing this book, of course, I didn't know about the data mesh book because I think they came out really, really similar timeframes. And the interesting thing is we were coming at the same challenge very similarly, right? In terms of when you think about data, the operational context, fit for purpose from a quality perspective, usage all comes from those, you know, from a data mesh perspective, domains. I talk about them in the context of departments or functions. Those people know that data. You come at them with a data governance stick and say, you got to govern your data, you got to own it, you should be a steward. They're going to be like, no. But when you talk to them about improving the usage of the data and the quality and how they can use it better and make more insights, that's a completely different conversation. But they understand it way better than anybody in a central function of data governance ever could. So when we create those hub and spoke models, that hub, that central function, is anything that's repeatable. So when you think about just that image of a hub and spoke, that central part is the things that everybody has to do that repeats for those spokes. So the spokes aren't creating everything from scratch every time. And there's some consistency and repeatability around the function. So it's tools like data catalog tools, data quality tools, it's templates. So people know, you know, how do you start these things? It's getting over that tyranny of the blank page. It is training. And it's not to say that the training is exactly the way you want to deploy it into your spoke, but it gets, you know, you're not, again, creating everything from scratch. And those spokes feed back to the hub. so that from a hub perspective, you know what's happening in the spokes, and then you're always improving those repeatable central functions. And it's not for that data governance leader in that hub. It is not about owning and driving every specific thing. It is about removing obstacles for other organizations to be able to use their data and be comfortable with the data quality and know the lineage and ensure the protection of those assets without feeling like they all of a sudden are data governance or data industry professionals. So yeah, I mean, I think the federated model, I've seen the federated model work and work really well.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thanks for that. It feels like we could go on and go on and go on, but unfortunately, our time is up. So thanks so much for sharing all that. And I think what you just laid out on the federated model was also a good summary in a way, in many ways. But my final question to you would be, let's say someone is tasked with modernizing, I will not say disrupting, but modernizing data governance in their organization, and found now, I think, a lot of good ideas and input in this conversation already. But what would your advice be? How should they start? And what would maybe the main points they should really look out for so they can succeed?
Well, so the first thing is what you need is enthusiasm for the work. And I don't even care if you're a data professional or not. You just need to know that it's the right thing. And you just need some enthusiasm for the work, because this is not fun work. It's not exciting. It's not, well, it's definitely dramatic, but for all the wrong reasons. So you know, it's just some enthusiasm for the work is really beneficial. From there, I think it's really important to define your scope. And that is why I talked about those pillars. And one of the things I advocate for organizations is when you look at those pillars and you define them, and by the way, you can define them for yourself too. Take pillars out, you can add them. Like, there's nothing magic about those four pillars. But data governance is when you're doing something across all four of those pillars. And so you propose those pillars and you have your organization, probably executives, because you do need a top-down, bottom-up, give you some boundaries for within those pillars, and that's part of that scope. And then you just... Then you start, because one of the biggest challenges as people are attempting to modernize some of this stuff, and by the way, this is a question that probably take me 20 minutes to answer correctly, but the main thing is you have to start and then be willing to, you know, edit what you're doing, right? It's an agile concept, essentially. But as things aren't working, fix it. Don't, you know, just throw up your hands like, oh, this doesn't work. The whole idea here is you have to start and you have to just keep going. Because that's really what a lot of those data governance challenges are, is just persistence.
Absolutely. Also on that, maybe, I mean, Carsten, if I understand your question correctly, you would also assume you have situations where you have been applying more of a traditional approach to data governance and now you want to modernize it, right? So changing the ways of working obviously is always hard. But I feel like if you want to try out a new way of working, then you need the right people who are willing to experiment with you as well, right? So finding maybe a use case where you are like on a smaller scope, for us, one data set potentially, to make clear to everyone that you're trying a new way of working, where you're changing and shifting a little bit the responsibilities, and where you want to document in a different way, and you want to have a data quality monitoring and a remediation process in a different way, and everybody can actually be passionate about trying it a new way, that would be a great start, right? So having one proof of concept then can act as a vehicle to then basically convince others to do it too, and then you can roll it out step by step. It's never going to be easy. I think it's data governance. It's very public about dealing with change management all the time and how hard that is. So the only key is to find people that are promoters of change already and to do it with them first. So you can then convince the resistance, basically, that are not really with you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Laura, Tianca, this has been great. Thanks so much for all your insights. And yeah, I wish you all the best. Hope to see you again soon, and I just could say bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.